Good afternoon and welcome to A Look at the Arts. I'm Tom Lounges, and today we are going to look at some really cute little furry animals and take a look at the environment. You see, the ecology, the environment, they all go hand in hand with humankind's survival. And the best way to reach children and teach them about the importance of being a steward of this great earth of ours, our only earth, is to teach them to take care of nature. And to do that, we have Northwest Indiana native Nick Mantis. He is a longtime region videographer and filmmaker, and I recently discovered that he is also the creator and writer of a delightfully entertaining and educational book series called Waterville. We'll talk about Waterville and how Nick came to do it.
But let's start off with a musical message from Candace Knight, a friend of this show, and her treatments of Robin Redbreast. Listen to the words. It's kind of scary. Even the birds notice the pollution.
Robin Redbreast looked down from her nest and saw the world from a different point of view. She saw sounds of spring, flowers, and everything looked beautiful, golden and brand new. But hidden somewhere in the tall green grass were sharp and shiny shards of broken glass, and she wondered about what she thought she knew. Bluebird flying high almost touched the sky. He sang a song as perfect as the day, dancing tops of trees. He left his case long ago and far away. But white and fluffy clouds turned into black. I lost him in between the old smokestacks, and I wonder, is he ever come? Just like you, I dream of brighter days, but it all seems to vanish in the haze. In my mind I'm free and I can fly, and I won't give up my wings or stop trying. Feeling light as air, never had a care, and every door was like the world had just begun. But summer sun turned into winter rain, the gray in every day seemed just the same.
An old friend of our show, Candace Knight of Blackmore's Night and her lullaby album, Starlight, Starbright. And that's a song called Robin Redbreast. If you listen to the words of it, it's a beautiful lullaby, but it's also a very scary lullaby. It talks about the robin sitting up in a tree and looking down and seeing not just the grass, but shards of glass in the grass and wondering, where did that come from? Talks about a bluebird flying high in the sky, almost touching the sky, only to get lost in the clouds of smog and smoke spilling out of the smokestacks of the mill regions. And these are daily things here in Northwest Indiana, especially, and all around the world, that we need to be concerned about, because we are poisoning our earth. And let's face it, we have just one. And that is the message, I believe. And we're going to find out from Nick Mantis, himself a father and a very concerned citizen of Northwest Indiana, who has taken his craft of writing and turned it into an educational and entertaining book series. And it's called Waterville. And Nick, tell us a little bit about this.
All right. Thanks for having me on the show today, Tom. Basically, the idea started when kind of kicking in my head when I lived in Hammond. Mm-hmm. And I grew up on State Street, and our next street over was Willow Court. And there are railroad tracks there. And that was my playground, basically, was a cement neighborhood, sidewalks, parking lots. Railroad tracks.
Didn't see a lot of grass.
No, not at all. And further down one block over, there was a place called Hobo Jungle that we used to call. And we realized that Hobo Jungle, what I realize now as an older adult, was basically a place where the trains dumped whatever excess cargo they had. And there were all kinds of dirt mounds, which I thought was dirt, but now that I think about it, one was orange, one was tan, one was dark black, one was another white color. But we used to ride our BMX bikes up and around there and play in Hobo Jungle, basically. And so when I moved in 1978, when I was 14, to St. John, we kind of moved into a brand new subdivision, and there were woods. Our house was like the third one down from the woods, mm-hmm. and ponds and lakes. And I remembered, you know, just how vividly the rich colors of the woods were, and the sounds of the birds and the night sky. And I learned how to fish. And, you know, we built forts, my friends and I, in St. John, out in the woods. And, you know, we hung out there. And what a contrastingly different scenario it was for a child to grow up in. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of took an interest into the environment, and that carried on into my pre-law studies at IUN. And, I got involved with SPIA, School of Public and Environmental Affairs. And right out of SPIA, I got really lucky. I got hired by an environmental law firm. And the attorneys that hired me were the very first graduating environmental attorneys that I'm told in the country. They came out of Northwestern in the early 70s, and they were very well connected with industry. I mean, you know, and when I got hired, I'm like, all right, I'm going to be part of this, you know, force that's going to protect the environment.
Right.
But what we actually did was defended polluters. And it was really interesting because I couldn't have asked for anything even better because, you know, it taught me the legal and the regulatory part of the environment right off the bat. But, you know, the justice system and the enforcement of the regulations and how loosely the laws were written and our clients not being liable for a certain amount of pollution. And I started really realizing, wow, you know, how can people find out about this? And granted, the environment is not a very popular political topic. You know, you do have your righteous cause and so forth. But
right.
When it comes down to the platform of, you know, priorities, you know, the environment doesn't really, you know, hit the big major headlines, you know.
Right.
Ironically, today in the Times, there's some about the U.S. steel pollution in Lake Michigan being a little bit more than what they thought, which is good to see in terms of awareness and getting that information out to the community. But I started realizing, you know, there's something here. So in 1999, I got a patent on a board game. I put all my experience in a board game.
Of course, we are from the board game generation.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, and I focused on Superfund. And mm-hmm. Superfund is a federal legislation that was passed, and it was intention was to clean up some of the most hazardous polluted sites in the country. And I worked on some of those cases. And let me tell you, you know, a lot of that money, the taxpayer money that's slated for cleanup actually goes to, you know, consultants, attorney fees, trees and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And when it comes down to what's left to clean up what and, you know, when it's ever going to get cleaned up, there's very little there. So I kind of took it upon my shoulders and put out this board game. And I took it to Vegas and to a board game convention. And my intention was to reach the general audience to teach them about the environment. And you basically ran a corporation, whether it was a steel mill or a nuclear power plant, or you had a garbage truck, kind of like Monopoly with the game symbols. And you ran around a board like the Game of Life, but there was a pit in the middle that you polluted. And long story short, you know, at the very end, there's barrels of pits polluting the pit in the middle, and you rolled your dice. And if you won that round, you got to take one barrel out. And slowly but surely, you cleaned up the site. And whoever's barrels was left in the pit was charged of paying for the rest of the cleanup. So then you counted your money and see who was the most successful CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that came out, you know, and they evaluated it at the Toy and Game Forum in 99 in Las Vegas, Parker Brothers people, the Milton Bradley people and so forth, they all said it's a great game. You do reach these people. It does teach about the environment, but it's a very small market. And so, you know, I got married in 99 and 2000, we had our first son. In 2003, we had our second son. And I started doing more video editing at home. I started watching some of the stuff my kids were watching, you know, and some of it was, you know, geared towards the children. But SpongeBob kind of really I took, you know, me away, and I started realizing, children aren't going to identify with a garbage truck or
right.
nuclear power plant or a board game or remediation or, you know, illegal water discharge, but they'll identify with little animals. So, you know, I got really lucky, and I was turned on by Don Hero, who said, you know what, you need to meet Doug Rice. And I'm like, who's Doug Rice? And Doug Rice is out of Homewood, Illinois, and he actually drew for Disney, and he worked on animatronics for Steven Spielberg. And Doug and I sat down, and I'm like, Doug, I have a cast of characters, and I'm hoping you can draw them for me. And they're in that very first page, one more over, and you'll see, you know, I have Milton. I had him draw a muskrat for me and a Wiggles the Worm, and man, I'm telling you, Doug hit it right on the spot. They were perfect.
These are great characters.
Yeah, and I took the characteristics of, you know, different children. You got the timid, the shy one. You got the feisty one. You got the curious one. You got the smart one, and I incorporated them into different animals. You know, they live on the land, the air, or in the water, you know, to simulate the different phases and parts of the environment that we're concerned about, that make up the environment. And so and the story came out of an actual case I worked on, a case of midnight dumpers, where these dumpers come, and you know, we saw that in Hammond, and you still see it in,
right.
you know, in parts of the region where people dump their barrels in some, you know, protected forest or private forest or woods or and leave. And so that was part of what I did at that law firm is, wait, these weren't our clients. Our clients hired this guy, so we had to defend our clients from that perspective.
Right.
You know, but, you know, since then, you know, since the 70s, you know, the laws are becoming a little tighter. They were loosely written. The enforcement is becoming more prevalent, I guess I should say was, and, you know, so forth. But the awareness is there, and I got lucky. A part of that was, you know, before these books were created, I was part of, after leaving Gardner, Curran & Douglas, I was hired by a consulting firm, and I was asked to teach for the very first time at U.S. Steel its 100-year history, the first environmental awareness classes in the late 90s. And that was an eye-opener, too. So I was able to incorporate all my perspective from a regulatory point of view, from a enforcement point of view, from an industrial standpoint, and from a private citizen's point of view, you know, the different aspects of, you know, what does it take to reach that message about, you know, educating people about the environment. And I'm hoping, like you mentioned in your introduction, that these animals will tell that story for me, because you do see in the first book, Little Wiggles makes Waterville his mm-hmm. new home, and these midnight dumpers come out and they illegally dump into the woods that he lives in at Waterville, and you get to see the oil seep into the ground and affect his living quarters.
And you see the crayfish. He's gasping
yeah.
in this illustration.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Your artist, again, the illustrations yeah. are so beautiful.
I got
this.
Lucky. Yeah.
And the storyline that you've written strikes home.
Yep.
I mean, you look at the pictures, you read the words, and you can't help but think, wait a minute, you know, these are our kids. This yep. is our future.
Yep.
And then you start reflecting back. After we talked that first time,
yep.
I started noticing, where are all the butterflies?
Yeah.
Where are the bees?
Yeah.
Where's the snakes?
Yeah.
I mean, when I was a kid growing up in Highland, we had a garter snake every
yeah.
day
right.
going in our yard. We were
right.
white butterflies, monarchs.
Right.
I don't see them. Where are they? Yeah. Is it the environment? Are we killing nature?
Well, we are sprawling in this area. I mean, that those woods that I used to play in is now another subdivision.
Yeah.
So where do those animals go, you know? And you're right. You know, every time I see it's rare to see a butterfly in my backyard now that I think about it. And I'm kind of like mesmerized when I do see one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, someone's got to speak for them. I'm not saying that I am, but these animals.
Well, you certainly are in this book.
They have to be represented, and this is them telling their story. One of the episodes further down in a book that I have planned for the future is about urban sprawl. And it's about, you know, one day the critters at Waterville wake up to find cement trucks pouring cement nearby and this excessive runoff of water coming through and, you know, all this noise pollution. And so hopefully that'll shed light and make the next generation and generations after that more aware of, you know, the impact that we as humans are making onto the environment. And not only the environment, meaning grass, trees, flowers, and so forth, but mm-hmm. the animals that depend on that environment to live on.
Flora and the fauna.
That's right.
And like I said, there's so many things that we're seeing disappear, and we kind of take for granted sometimes. I mean, growing up, we used to catch caterpillars and watch them turn into, you know, butterflies and set them free. And I mean, all these different things. We had fields all around, and like you said, there's no fields. The kids don't even go out and play anymore.
Yeah.
You mentioned building forts. I mean, I think we all did that back in the 60s and 70s.
Yep.
And now they sit there with their thumbs.
Right.
You know,
right.
So maybe even turning this from a board game into a video game or a computer game.
That is what I'm working on right now. I've converted my board game into a iPad type of electronic device where you can animate and see the different scenarios. So,
you know, the artists that are out there, not just the graphic artists, the storytellers, but the songwriters out there, so many of us are concerned about the environment, and yet it seems like an uphill climb. I mean, big money talks, oil talks, fracking, you know, all of this is still going on.
Right.
We have a president in office now that seems to think this is okay.
Yeah.
Pull money away from the environment.
Right.
Regardless of your political stance on government officials or your president, you got to open your eyes and say, I don't care who's in office. Do something.
Yeah.
We're suffocating. Our animals are suffocating. There's roadkill everywhere because they have nowhere to go.
Right.
And we are polluting our waterways. Again, we just had that scare here in northwest Indiana, Lake Michigan. Fortunately, it wasn't as bad as some people thought, but now you're saying it's a little worse than we thought.
Yeah.
The oceans, too. I was very involved for many years with different environmental protection groups that dealt with the ocean and the manatees and all that. And one of the groups that gives a lot of support, musical groups, is Jimmy Buffett and the Coral Reefer Band, and also the Beach Boys. And we're going to play a song now that just kind of goes along with the story, and we're going to get back to talking with Nick and how he created these characters. This goes back to 71. It's all about, that's how far back people started thinking about what we're doing to our Earth. This one's called Don't Go Near the Water by people who are known for going near the water, the Beach Boys.
Don't go near the water. Don't you think it's sad? What's happened to the water? Our water's going bad. Oceans, rivers, lakes, and streams have all been touched by man. Poison floating out to sea now threatens life on say.
Don't Go Near the Water. That's the Beach Boys from 1971, a song about polluting our oceans, our waterways. And that, of course, is a part of the topic in Waterville. It's a new book series created by Nick Mantis of Northwest Indiana. Nick, you are from Hammond originally. Are you still living in Hammond?
No, I live in Schererville now, not too far from the station here. That memory of Hammond and growing up really is vivid in my head. And, just some of the things we used to do just to entertain ourselves. But, we were out riding our bikes, doing whatever. Mm-hmm. But I just didn't know at the time, being in such an industrial area that, that was my environment until we moved. And I realized that there's more than just, cement sidewalks and alleys and basketball courts with broken glass everywhere. So,
right.
But then in 99, when I got married, we moved to Schererville, and we actually have a very beautiful park near my house, Roarman Park, and it is very beautiful.
A lot of the towns are doing that. They are giving the kids a place to play, but they're not our backyards.
Right.
You still got to get them there and get them home safe. I remember driving down US 30 and different parts in the south area here, and there was nothing but farmlands.
Yep.
I mean, now, everywhere you look, there's a strip mall or a big mall. I mean, when they built South Lake Mall, there was really nothing there.
Right.
The Star Plaza, the South Lake Mall were the only two big things in the late 70s.
Right.
And now the corridor all the way to Valpo was nothing but farms. It was dark, no street lights. It was kind of creepy to drive down there at night. And now it's just store, subdivision, condos. We are encroaching so much on the environment, the nature lands. And where are the animals to go? Everyone's like, push them back to where?
Yeah, right.
Where do they go?
Right. I don't know how to answer that. It's a shame to see them. And, you'll see, like you said, roadkill, a deer killed and a possum.
More and more than ever.
A skunk. And, and I'm like, that poor thing, we're encroaching on their territory. They're not encroaching on ours, and I really, I feel bad. I try to avoid whatever I can. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds.
I even avoid the frogs.
Yeah.
At night when it rains, I'm like, okay, I see it in the headline. I swerve around.
Yeah.
The little frog looks
exactly.
at me.
Exactly.
You feel bad for them because they have no idea who we are, what we are.
Yeah.
They're just trying to survive.
Right, exactly.
And we just keep taking and taking and taking. And that's shame on us as a human race.
Well, unless there's something that a profit that could be made out of an animal or whatever, then the value that we place on them is higher. Then all of a sudden there's concern for that.
Right.
But we should just have concern for life in general.
Nature's waiting. Oh,
Spirit, Nature's Way, and today we're talking about the environment with author Nick Mantis. He's got a new book called Waterville that addresses the stewardship of our earth and nature. And Nick, I'm thinking this is geared towards what, second grade, third grade kids?
You know, young readers. I've been reading him in the third grade level. That's okay. Where I'm working with a literacy program with the South Shore Arts. Julian von Volkenberg, I think I got that right. And John King and Trish Hernandez and the staff out there, they picked my book to be part of the literacy program there that they have every year. And I'm telling you, I go into these elementary schools and these third graders, they form a circle around me, and I tell them a little bit about myself and the idea of how the book came up. And then I read it to them, and at the end of the page with the ending, they all applaud and they're so happy. And then we have a general discussion about the environment. And it just tickles me to death to get that kind of reaction, and I really appreciate their feedback. And you know, it was an idea that just, you know, like I said, it was a board game in my head, and somehow I knew I needed to reach that younger audience. And then I'm standing, you know, years later in front of these children reading a book, and I hope that it makes an impression on them and they become a little bit more aware. I think they do, actually, on the spot, the questions that they ask, and I could see the twinkle in their eye and how they're you know, they have something they want to say, an experience that they had with a butterfly or something like that with an animal. And it just, you know, it tickles me to death that hopefully I'm making an impact one mm-hmm. child at a time. You know?
And you can find out more at watervillebooks.com, watervillebooks.com. Now, I have the first edition in my hands here. There is in this advertisement for coming soon, four more editions, Big Freeze, The Flood, Rusty Forest, Great Storm. Are these done yet?
No, those are, I'm planning next year to have one more done, then the following year another one.
So it's an annual, like one every year you'll release a book in the series.
This is the first year. I would say 2017 is the first year that officially Waterville has come to the marketplace. It is on Amazon. You can find it if you punch in Waterville Books, or you can go to the website.
So we can buy this right now, this first
book. You can't buy the hard copy books yet because I'm waiting to finish this very cool interactive children's website. Mm-hmm. And from there, you'll be able to buy the hard copies. And I'm almost done there. I've had a lot of people ask me about it, and I'm trying to push it. I try to get it done before Earth Day, but I didn't get it done. But it'll definitely be done in the next few weeks. And then I'll make an announcement, and you'll be able to buy the hard copy books.
Which is what I have here.
Yep.
Okay.
And those will go into libraries all over the country.
So right now, what is available is what, the Kindle version?
The e-book.
The e-book?
Yeah, the e-book. Okay. Yep. I think it's $2.99 for it.
Okay.
And which is really neat, too, because I've had a lot of people tell me they liked it. The colors and the characters show up on their iPad really neat, and the children are just mesmerized by them. And like I said, these characters are very unique. You know, we have the first chapters about Wiggles, the worm, and he ventures out of his bait box because he finally sees a pond for the first time. And he doesn't want to be bait. He doesn't want – so he decides
to crawl. I can't blame him.
Yeah. So he decides to crawl out of the bait box, and he finds a new home in Waterville, and he makes these wonderful friends, you know.
It's funny that he makes friends with birds.
Yeah.
Birds. I find that funny as a
word.
Well,
there's an underlying story with Bernie, the crane, and she's a vegetarian, actually.
Oh, okay.
And so there's some stories there that will be further developed in the upcoming episodes and books. But then, you know, then you see what happens to Wiggles' home with the Midnight Dumpers, and then you see the team, how they work together, and with the help of a conservation officer that's nearby. They go and get her assistance to help them.
That's Carla.
Carla, the conservation officer.
Is she based on someone you've met?
You know, they're maybe a few of them, but I can't remember her name. It might have been Carla, but there was a ranger mm-hmm. that was at the Indiana State Lodge there in Gary, and she passed away, and I just met her, and we had this great discussion about Waterville. And so I kind of think of her when I created Carla.
Okay.
And so I tried to incorporate, you know, real personalities of real people I know. So I guess, yeah, to answer your question, yes, it would have to be after her. And so
the characters, the animals, all have distinct personalities. Are they based on people you've met, or are they just people that you'd like to meet?
Just general characteristics. Okay. Like, you know, you have your timid child, your go-get-em child. You got your smart kid, and then you have your pessimistic kid. So I wouldn't say directly to anybody in particular, but characters. characteristics in general of children. And so, you know, but there are some like, okay, Cray, who's the crawfish.
Mm-hmm.
I kept thinking of Danny DeVito for some reason, you know. And so crayfish is derived from the Danny DeVito taxi type of character.
Okay.
Because what do you think about when the cray's sitting there crawling at the bottom of the of Waterville and all of a sudden a can or a tire hits him right on the head and he's got to, you know, that mound is now covered with debris and he's got to crawl over to get into that mound where he lives. And so he's always angry. He's always, you know, arguing with, why is this all happening in my Waterville? And so, you know, and then I had Milton as the muskrat. And I thought of a child that, you know, really liked the Harry Potter type of genre and really is smart and keen on facts. And, you know, Doug was able to draw up Milton to the T in my head. I can't say enough about Doug Rice's work.
Will he be working in all the books with you? Is this a partnership really coming together?
Yep. We had a great working relationship. And now that I'm settled in, I had a few things I had to get out of the way video project-wise. This has kind of been my side job. So now I'm going to sit down with Doug, and we're going to sit down, and I'm going to make the investment to get the next book created. And so, Doug, if you're listening out there, I'll be calling you very soon.
And Doug's local?
South He's Homewood, okay. Illinois. He's now teaching at Columbia College as well.
Wow. I can't get over the illustrations. They are just beautiful.
They're perfect.
And how long does it take him?
To be honest with you, these drawings were made in 2004, 2005, and 2006. I just now, I got it out into an ebook in 2012 or 13, and then someone at the South Shore Arts saw it on Amazon and realized, hey, you know, let's make these hard copies, and we would like to incorporate it in the literacy program. So that kind of really kicked me in the butt to get this into gear, and now I'm basically spending a little bit more time than ever publishing these books. But to answer your question, he probably, you know, I'd say about a week, a page a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you give him carte blanche as far as creativity on it? You just give
him
the character?
We collaborate. Okay. Yeah, because, you know, the idea, the whole storyline was my idea and the experiences and so forth. And you know, the illustrations were spot on. Doug's a great listener. And he does, you know, send me a couple approvals. But I think maybe out of everything you see there, I might have just had him slightly alter one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a very good listener, and he knows what he's doing. He's a true professional. Hand-drawn, you know. You don't see those anymore.
Right.
I can't remember exactly the company he worked for in Chicago, but there were a bunch of animators or cartoonists drawing the good old-fashioned way, but they lost their jobs in the 80s and 90s because of automation.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the work also was being shipped out to Korea and in Asia market, where they would draw to save money and send it back here to the companies that needed them. I'm proud to say that, you know, I was able to grab one of those guys and have him draw for me, regardless of whatever the price was. But Doug kept it reasonable for me, and I'm sure we were both happy with the outcome.
So you mentioned you do a lot of the readings in the schools. When will these be available in the libraries?
Well, the South Shore Arts is actually, through their donators and sponsors, were able to buy 300 copies of Waterville. And
the hard copy?
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're spreading they're donating them to as many schools and libraries in Lake County, and I think in Porter County, some of it as well. But in a few weeks, I would say the end of May here, I should have the site up and the books ready to go.
Okay.
That's, you know, maybe first week of June, if anything. But now I'm trying to do it definitely before school ends.
What will we find at the WatervilleBooks.com website?
You'll see a little profile of each character, which is really neat to read. And then you'll get to see their characteristics. And then you'll also get to have the link to the Amazon site for the e-edition of the e-book. And then a little bio on myself, you know, giving you a nutshell of, you know, my background, a little bit that I touched upon here. And you'll see some illustrations of the upcoming copies as well.
Will we see more characters infiltrate Waterville as the books continue?
Yep, that's a great question.
This is the core group right here.
This is the core group.
Okay.
But, you know, in my head, in a migration. You know, one day everybody at Waterville wakes up and there's a flock of new birds hanging out at the pond. And so, you know, what happens to animals? How do they correspond? Do they correspond? Does one preying on the other or so forth? So we'll get to learn. And also the more important thing is to teach children through that story about migration and how the animals migrate from place to place.
So we see a lot of the Canadian geese and the ducks here, which we didn't see before either 10, 20 years ago.
Right,
now
right.
they're like hanging out all year.
Right, right.
Why is that?
Yeah, I know, yeah. So, you know, I do have to brush up on my biology and things of that nature because some of these children are asking me some great questions that I can't quite answer yet. So I have to brush up on my biology, but, you know, it's all good stuff, you know. You can never learn too much.
Right. Well, one of our getaway places for my wife and I, we go to the Portage where the spill was, actually, the Portage Dunes there. Mm-hmm. And we'll hang out by that that clubhouse, and we'll just listen to the crickets because we don't hear crickets where we live. You know, and we used to.
Right.
You know, you get to see the birds. You get to actually sometimes see the fish jump in the lake. And these are just things that I used to take for granted, and now I enjoy. That's our go-to. Instead of going to the movies, we'll go to the beach. On a nice day and just watch nature.
Right.
And I see a lot more people there than we used to when we first started going there a few years ago. Now we see more and more families. And it seems like a lot of people are kind of plugging into the fact that we live in a beautiful area. We're blessed to have the dunes.
Oh, yeah.
And now with the spill, you start thinking, wow, you know, what happens if this is all taken away? Let's go enjoy it while we can.
Yeah.
And on that note, let's play some Marvin Gaye. Mercy Me, the ecology song. Things ain't what they used to be.
Skies go. Poison is the wind that blows from the north and south and east. Oh, mercy, mercy me, mercy. All things ain't what they used to be. Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas. Fish full of mercury. Mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be. Radiation underground and in the sky. Animals and birds who live nearby are alive. Mercy, mercy me. All things ain't what they used to be. What about this overcrowded land? How much more we use from man? Can't you stand?
Great Marvin Gaye, the ecology song, Mercy, Mercy Me. My guest is Nick Mantis, and we're talking about his new book, Waterville.
I'm so excited about this book, and I love these characters. Do you have a favorite? I mean, obviously, Wiggles is like your firstborn, so to speak.
Yeah. I'd have to say, you know, I'd have to say Milton has to be up there, the muskrat, because, you know, he has the answers, you know. Mm-hmm. Even everybody kind of, like, resents that he knows everything. You know, they make fun of all the other animals, kind of tease him a little bit about being so smart. He does become the savior. And I also like Cray because
he's— The grump?
Yeah. Yeah, they're all fantastic. You got mm-hmm. Blip and Blink, the lightning bugs. You know, they speak in their own little language. And then you have Chip and Chomp, the Beaver Brothers, and episodes built around them where they, you know, build a dam where they're not supposed to. Then you got the snail.
Slug
the snail, yeah. And he's real timid, or she's real timid. You know, some of these insects are not a boy or a girl; they're both. So you know, you got to consider that with their personalities as well. And so, you know, I did kind of create the characters as their own characteristics as well. I mean, you know, so just trying to incorporate that into the reality of the stories that they're a part of, and building the storyline around them. And so your question about new characters, mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. They're in my head, and we just got to put them down on pencil and on paper.
You mentioned that the children enjoy when you come in and read and show them the books. What's the response been from the educators and the people that basically it's going to be their job to take your books now and help expose them? What's the response been?
Well, what's interesting is that they allowed me to just kind of, you know, look at some of the evaluations, and they were very positive, and not only so much about learning about the environment, but a lot of the children are like, I'd like to write my own book, you know, because mm-hmm. I also, you know, emphasize, you know, to read and to write. And I do ask, you know, how many of you guys want to write a book when you get older? And they all raise their hand, you know, and how many of you guys enjoy reading? And so, you know, the message is also to, you know, tell your story. You know, do you have a story? Create a story. Entertain and enlighten, you know, your community or the population of your experiences. And, you know, so the impact and the response has been, you know, not only are they enjoying a little bit more awareness of the environment, but they're also learning that reading can be fun and writing can be very imaginative and very realistic at the same time, and have a very important message.
Okay. So it's like a double-blade sword.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Part of the thing we do at the library with the foundation is we support literacy in the schools, and you're giving them a good reason to read because it's characters they like.
Yep.
And they're learning something besides reading.
Yep.
They're learning about the environment. I mentioned in the beginning that this book series strives to teach them to become ecological stewards mm-hmm. and protect the earth. Are you finding that these kids are like scratching their head at the end of the story saying, wow, I've kind of thrown stuff in the lake before, and maybe want to go out and help clean? Are you getting that kind of feedback?
Yeah, I do ask. You know, there's that page there where the fishermen that just
throwing his sandwich. Yeah,
yeah, they're throwing their lunch basically in the pond. And I ask, is this a good idea or a bad idea? And they're like, no. And I'm like, have any of you done that yourselves? And they all shake their heads. But at least it gives them food for thought, you know, mm-hmm. that it is a bad thing. I'm not trying to be too preachy when I read the book to
right.
them. I want them to just become a little bit more aware of, you know, their actions. Because as they grow older, you know, I mean, in our days, it was throwing the cigarette out the window and we had the Indian crying.
Right.
You know, and it still makes an impact on me. You know, it did when I was a kid. And I know it sounds crazy, but my gum wrapper I put in the ashtray, you know. And,
right.
You know, and then when I taught at U.S. Steel, the environmental awareness classes, you know, an emphasis was, you know, your point source polluting. You know, if you can minimize right where you're polluting the point action, then that's all you need to do. Right there, point source polluting or non-polluting. And so, you know, I might carry in my pocket a bunch of, you know, wrappers or whatever and wait till I get to a garbage can. I know it sounds stupid, but, you know, I'd rather – I feel better about myself
right.
doing that, you know.
Right.
And I really can't stand people I see in cars.
Throwing stuff out the window.
Oh, it drives me crazy.
I just pretend I have a laser on my car.
Yeah, how about it? Yeah. Well, I won't go that far, but yeah, I hear you.
I like lasers.
I still see it today, too. People just throwing things out of their window. And I just, did that person just throw a bag of fast food out their window?
Why? You know, you're going to stop somewhere to get gas, go home, just throw it in a garbage can. Well, what is the point of that?
I had somebody last spring do one right in front of my house, and I actually got in my car and I tracked them down and I pulled in their driveway when they pulled on, and I picked it up and I go, listen, why don't you throw this in your own front yard, okay? And I kind of tossed it right at him, and he looked at me and he's like, oh, you're cool, you know, I understand, you know, and I'm like, don't do that, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it takes a second just to properly dispose of it.
Right.
You know, and so.
There's garbage cans everywhere.
And plus, you know, people don't realize this or not, but, you know, your empty plastic cup or whatever it is from your local favorite fast food place, if that follows the water on top of a drain, it's now going to block that drain from absorbing the water that's supposed to drain into the proper areas to keep flowing out of the neighborhood. And I have one right in front of my house, and if that thing gets plugged, I'm getting water in our crawl space. So, you know, I always keep an eye on that. And so, you know, I'm always trying to make sure that no one pollutes in front of my house. And, you know.
When we were in San Antonio, and also in Key West, some of the things that they're doing now is they're adding a surcharge for a plastic bag. If you leave a store, you have to buy the bag.
Yeah.
And at first I was kind of grumbling about it because I thought, I'm going to pay 10 cents to carry the stuff I just bought at a high price home.
Right.
And then I started looking back on it and I thought, you know, I bring the plastic bags in the house and we dispose of them properly. That's just what we do. But I realized a lot of people, like you said, toss them out.
Yeah.
They'll buy a pack of gum, it comes in a bag, they toss the bag on the ground, put the gum in their pocket.
Right.
So I kind of applaud them for that, although it is a little annoying when you do try to follow the rules.
Right.
But I guess it's a small price to pay because if that plastic gets into the oceans, especially those six pack rings, they get, you know, embedded on the throats of dolphins and other animals, and then they grow turtles, and it suffocates them. It chokes them.
It's horrible.
And there's no way to get the birds too. You know, the ducks and the different things. They play with them, and they get hooked on them, and they drown. And you know, it's just craziness.
But back on your bags charge, you know, there's a local chain here that charges what a 5 cents for a plastic bag and whatever, a dime for a paper bag, or might have that vice versa. But I'll tell you what, I know it sounds silly, 10 cents for a bag, but I keep them. In the back of my car, there's like four or five of them still there. Because, you know, hey, now it's an investment that I, you know, even though it's 10 cents, you know, and so I kind of maintain them and I handle them a little
bit. And I'm torn. I mean, you got to carry your stuff in something.
Yeah.
But I'm torn between the paper bags because I want to hug a tree, you know, or the plastic, of which never dissolves.
Right.
So what's the better of the two evils? Do you get the paper? Do you get the plastic?
Right, right.
You know, the plastic's reusable for so long.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you can melt it back down and make a park bench
or
something else.
Well,
so,
you know, here in Northwest Indiana, we do have, you know, they did call us the armpit of the country when it came to an environment. So I'm kind of glad, and I'll take pride in the fact that somebody from Northwest Indiana is turning what that label was of us here, you know, with all the factories and the ecosystems that we have combined living side by side. You know, you look at the Enviro Center there by Wolf Lake, and you have all the industry right there, BP Amoco, then you got Wolf Lake, and then in the middle you have an environmental center there that's reaching out to children and so forth. And, you know, and we get recognition for a lot of the efforts that we make here in Northwest Indiana in terms of environmental consciousness and awareness and so forth. And so, you know, why not turn what was once in the 60s and 70s negative? You know, even here downstate, you know, we were the polluters.
Yeah. Well, if you look at that place I was talking about in Portage, and you look at the wall graphics there, there were acid pools, and now there's beaches.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy how we were able to turn it around in 20, 30 years and reinvent nature.
Right.
And replant the fauna and the flora and everything that was there. The insects are, you know, we're taking care of them. You can't step on the grass, literally, in certain areas there.
Yep.
But again, we're changing the face of Northwest Indiana, one step, one animal, one building at a time. Obviously, this is not a slam in any way to any of the BP people or anybody like that, because it's a service. It's a job. We need it. We have to have it.
Right.
But we have to have it responsible.
Right.
And I think that's the nice balance.
Right.
You know, they're doing a job. The environmental people are doing a job. We all coexist together. We need their gas. We need their oil.
Right.
You know, we need the coal. We need the things that we say are damaging the earth.
Yeah.
So where's the happy medium?
Right.
By educating.
You know, and real briefly, when I went and taught in the 90s that environmental awareness course at U.S. Steel, They would put me in a room with about 80 to 100 steel workers, and they have never had an awareness class at all. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these guys were very upset to even be there because it was a consent decree where either U.S. Steel paid, you know, X millions of dollars, tens of millions, or, you know, minimally spend millions of dollars and educate their workforce. And I was their very first teacher with two other gentlemen that hired me up, and we went from the east side to the west side, from the coke plant to the finishing lines. And I'm telling you, these guys did not want to be in there because it's kind of a political thing there, you know, between management and union. You know, what do you do with that barrel? You know, my boss told me to do this with it or whatever. And I was there just to say, you know, listen, is it in your job description? If it's not, you know, at least get it on paper to show that, you know, you were ordered to, you know. Mm-hmm. But my point is after the 2 years that we taught every employee at U.S. Steel environmental awareness, it was rated in the mill's 100-year-plus history, the highest rated consulting course ever taught in U.S. Steel's history there. And I was a big part of that. And I take pride in that. That's what really got me going because it was prior to the Superfund because it was in 95, 96 I did that. And then that's when I came up from working in a law firm, working inside of a mill, doing environmental awareness. That's when I came up with Superfund. And then when I had my children, that's when I realized the way that really reached the audience is through, you know, the characters. And so I converted my playing pieces into the animals and they're able to you know, tell the stories that I really wanted to tell. So it's been a joy. I mean, meeting these children and hearing their questions and their interest in the environment, I think it will make a positive impact on them and maybe their parents too, you know, if they're not already conscious, you know. So like you said, you know, one building, one child at a time.
Waterville Books, watervillebooks.com. As you'll find all the information. Look for the hard copies to be coming in the next couple months.
Yep. Less, yeah.
And now available for ebooks. If you have your Kindle or your electronic reading device of any sort, you can get them for your kids. Read it to them. Show them these wonderful illustrations. Look for it in your libraries coming soon. And Nick Mantis, thank you for joining us. Is there anything we haven't touched on?
No, it's beautiful. Just, you know, protect the environment and consider your actions when it comes to disposing your waste or animals or any, you know, let's just respect all living things.
Well, let's go back with a lady who was on the point of the rock and pop movement when it came to the environment. She was right up there along with Jackson Browne and those. This is Joni Mitchell from Ladies of the Canyon, 1970, and Big Yellow Taxi. As we say goodbye, thank you, Nick.
Thanks, Tom.
They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. With a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. And they charged the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on apples, but leave me the birds and the bees. Please don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam. And a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot. They paved paradise, put up a parking lot.
All right, that wraps up A Look at the Arts. Joni Mitchell, Big Yellow Taxi. I love that song, Dan. How about you?
Man, that is such a good song. It's been a while since I've heard that.
Me too. I thought, you know, this is a great show to put that on.
Right, I'm glad you
pulled
that out.
Dealing with the dirty wastelands and the parking lots that take away the nature.
Yeah, really.
Nick was talking about that in the beginning.
Yeah, he was. And, you know, it's what's sad about that is it really is it's not getting any better.
No, it's not.
Good conversation today.
Good book, watervillebooks.com. Again, check it out. Check out the illustrations, the storylines, and introduce your kids to it. And watch for it to hit your libraries real soon.